Hello, welcome to series 5, episode 4 of the Prompted by Nature podcast. I hope you're doing well. We've been inundated with rain and wind and thunder. Well, actually not so much thunder, but lots of rain and wind here in the UK. So if that's you too, I hope you're doing okay in all of it. It's been quite intense, but I suppose it's kind of not the beginning of things. I think it's been going on for a while, but you know, I'm not sure that's going to get any better. But yeah, I hope you've been okay in all of it. So the action point for this week, some of you might know that it's COP27 happening at the moment, be kind of at the end of it by the time I release this, but it's worth going on to the COP27 website and just having a little look at what's been going on, what different countries have been saying, who's been speaking, and yeah, just getting a sense of what's going on really, because I think it's good to stay on top of these things, not to get too bogged down with it, which can happen very easily, but just to almost know what your country is signing up for and pledging to do. Another really good thing to do at this point, if you don't already follow her, is have a look on Instagram, or she also has a podcast called the Yikes Podcast. She's a young woman called Michaela Loach, and she's at COP27. She's doing loads of updates. She's been doing, lots of conversations there, and she's kind of updating about it. So if you don't know what's going on there, she's a really good person to go to. I'll put all the links in the show notes so that you can go straight to those pages and have a little look around. So on to today's episode. Today I am thrilled to release my conversation with Catherine Luck Taylor. As I said at the end of the conversation, I finished off with just a massive smile on my face, and that really didn't go for most of the day. It was such a lovely conversation, and yeah, it was just really uplifting to hear from Catherine and all of the work that she's doing and her creativity, her incredible work. This was just such a lovely conversation. I hope you really enjoy listening to it. So a little about Catherine. So Catherine is a ceramic artist based in West Cornwall, one of my absolute favourite places, specialises in raku clay ceramics, who draws on her English and Ghanaian heritage for her stunning pots. She's passionate about the Cornish landscape and uses this as inspiration for her work. Drawing on her African heritage, she specialises in traditional hand building techniques such as pinching and coiling, with many surfaces burnished to a smooth sheen using her favourite beach pebble. Her work has appeared on the BBC's The Great Pottery Throwdown. I found that really hard to say for some reason. And her raku ceramics are available through galleries in Cornwall, London and Scotland. Catherine also hosts regular open studio events where she demonstrates the raku fire process. She also runs grief retreats using a combination of nature and art therapy, creating safe spaces for those going through grief and wishing to take time out within a supportive and nurturing community. And Catherine talks about these in the conversation, and they do just sound like the most wonderful offering, especially if you're going through a period of grief, mourning. I say period of grief, it doesn't really end, does it? But they just sound like the most wonderful things. So in this conversation we discuss Catherine's creative journey, embracing and celebrating her Ghanaian ancestry through her work with the Adinkra symbols and what they mean to her, the meditative aspects of creating ceramics, the creative processes ritual. We talk about how she gains inspiration and her love of the Cornish landscape. We talk about the grief retreats. We talk about the importance of creativity in our modern world. I think you'll love what she says there. We talk about art and hope, and of course, the lesson she wants to pass on and her vision for the future. I would recommend going to Catherine's website and having a look at, she's done a video of her process, and it just looks so wonderful. I'd really like to actually have a go at it one day. I'm not sure I've got the patience, but yeah, it's such a great video. So I really encourage you to go to her website, which is www.lucktaylorceramics.co.uk. And then she's on all of the social medias at Luck Taylor Ceramics. But as I say, all of the links will be in the show notes, including a link to her shop. Definitely go and have a look. And if you're looking to invest in a really beautiful piece, or if you want to get one of the Adinkra stones, have a look. Everything is just so stunning. It really is. Just a note before we start, my microphone cut out at one point. It's really brief and you may not even notice it, but it sounds like I haven't responded to her when she said something, but I have. I don't know why it cut out. Some episodes to listen to that go really well with this one are Series 2, Episode 3A, Lorraine Tyndale. That was our conversation on nature-based EMDR and taking your therapy outside. And then Series 2, Episode 8A, Poonam Sangrajka, Skyscapes and Art as Meditation. And Series 3, Episode 7A, Rosalind Lowry, Land Art Celebrating Our Boglands. And then Series 4, Episode 10A, Elizabeth Gleave, Restoring the Earth Through the Arts. So have a little look. Again, the list is in the show notes, so you don't have to memorize it. If you haven't listened to any of those, I would recommend listening to them with this one because they tie in quite nicely in terms of what we talk about the land and art and all of that kind of thing, and how important art and creativity are in our modern world. As always, I'm at www.promptedbynature.co.uk and Instagram at prompted.by.nature, Twitter, which I'm currently reconsidering, but who knows, at promptedxnature, and I'm also on Facebook, just Prompted by Nature. If you didn't listen to the last prompt, so my prompt for Eleanor, you can still get the workbook on my Substack newsletter. So feel free to go to the website, go through to the Substack newsletter and you can download it there. You can sign up, you don't have to. I'm going to start sending those out. But yeah, everything is on my website. You don't really need to go anywhere else. So yeah, remember that the writing prompt will come out on Wednesday for this episode. I hope you really enjoy it. Let me know how you get on if you listen, any thoughts that come up, anything you take from it. Happy listening, and I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Hi, Helen. I'm Catherine Look-Taylor. I'm based in Far West Cornwall, and I specialise in hand-built raku-fied ceramics. And a lot of my work is really inspired by the landscape, like the wild rugged cliffs and the turquoise seas. And I also draw on my African heritage. I'm half Ghanaian and half English, and I kind of bring the Ghanaian elements into my work using the Adinkra symbols in my ceramics as well. And I also work in healing art. So I create sacred spaces to enable people to kind of really connect with their ancestral heritage. And I use those spaces to create ritual and ceremony. I also host grief rituals, and I'm currently training as an ancestral healing practitioner as well. So it all kind of feeds into the work I'm doing.
I love that it's just like you have this very like concrete, pardon the expression, but like, you know, like tangible way that your creativity expresses itself. But then you've got this like, you know, that kind of ethereal, like the thing you can't touch, you know, yeah, aspect of it. Yeah. Because I was going to ask you about kind of your creative journey, and I wonder if that will be part of it, but like, how did you find ceramics and that? Have you always been creative, and how did that kind of like blossom into what you're now doing?
Yeah. That's a really interesting question. And I think I've always been creative. And even when I was a kid, I was always like painting and drawing and playing with plasticine and Play-Doh and all that. And then when I was at school, we did have a chance to do some ceramics, and I sort of was doing kind of a bit of sculptural work. And then I went straight from school at 16. I did a 2-year foundation course. I was up in Yorkshire at the time, and I did a 2-year foundation course at Huddersfield. And I went straight on to do a degree in ceramics at Wolverhampton. And after I left, I was doing ceramics, but not a lot, because obviously it's really difficult when you don't have a lot of equipment. And then I had a back injury. It was really difficult for me to work with clay and ceramics. So I started working with textiles because I could kind of do that quite easily if I was laying down and I was sewing. When I was a teenager, I discovered the Adinkra symbols, and part of my journey with that that side of things was when I grew up, I didn't really know my dad. He was around a bit. He was from Ghana in West Africa. So we kind of lost touch with him during my childhood. So there was that kind of like sense of really wanting to find that part of my identity. I grew up with a white English mum and family. And so for me, finding that African side was really important. And I connected with that through the Adinkra symbols, and they've kind of come in and out of my practice over the years. So then I went, how did I get back into ceramics? When I moved to Brighton, actually, and I was working with some friends. We had a space up at Stanmer Park called Earth Kilns.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's a beautiful location. And we were kind of doing experimental firings, like pit firings and raku firings. And so that kind of really fed into the work I was doing. It was more kind of installation based. And then, so the ceramics has kind of always been there in and out as a thread throughout my work. Mm. And then when I moved to Cornwall, it was 2009, not long after I had my son. So obviously things change once you have a child. Your time becomes limited. So I decided I really just wanted to focus on the ceramics. And obviously being in Cornwall, I was so inspired by the landscape and nature. And that was one of the things that drew me to Cornwall, was I loved the wildness of the landscape here. And I live like the furthest west you can go. So it's really like crazy weather, wild winds, and yeah, and a lot of artists live in this area as well, so it's very kind of an inspiring place to be on all levels. So I kind of developed that work, and so I've got my Wild Cornwall collection, my Sea and Cliffs collection, so very much inspired by the Cornish landscape, and that's been really popular collections which I sell through galleries. And then last year, I got a grant from the Arts Council called Develop Your Creative Practice. Thank you. And it was just absolutely brilliant. It's such a good grant, because it means you can just have time just to create your work, and you don't have to have any specific outcomes. It's just a purely experimental time. And that was just invaluable for me. So it meant that I could just really focus on the other aspects of my work. So bringing more and working with the Adinkra symbols and creating installations. So I didn't have to focus on, I had to make something and sell it. You know, it could just be anything I wanted. So I kind of got more sculptural, done loads of research on the Adinkra symbols. I've been creating ceremonies, ancestral healing ceremonies as part of that work, and also the grief rituals are kind of connected with that work as well. So that's kind of where I'm at now.
So before we kind of move on, I would love to hear about the Adinkra symbols, because I often use like the tree Oum, which is kind of the Celtic tree, all of those symbols and those kind of runic symbols.
Yeah.
And I would love to hear about the Adinkra symbols, because I know nothing about them. And yeah, they sound fascinating, and perhaps in the same way that for me the tree Oum is. Mm. That's very, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the Adinkra symbols originated in Ghana in West Africa, and they were originally printed onto fabric and used for ceremonial purposes and for funerals, as funeral cloths or wear, people would wear them to funerals. So that was kind of like I'm not even sure when they first originated, but it's kind of been lost in time. But they're really, really popular in Ghana, and the symbols are really well known, and they're everywhere. But when you come out of Ghana, people don't know about them so much. So I've been working with them in a slightly different way, because obviously I've been working with clay. So I've been using the symbols within my work. And I've always been fascinated with symbols and just the power that they have within themselves. So just for me, just kind of like a symbol can kind of almost like radiate that energy. And the Adinkra symbols have lots of different meanings, which is really fascinating. And I created these Adinkra, I call them my Adinkra spirit stones. And they're made out of clay, they're raku-fied, so I burnish them, and then I have the symbol, which is usually in turquoise, so it's raku-fired, and so it's kind of black with like a bright turquoise symbol on them. And I created them into, the first thing I made was like a set of nine Adinkra divination stones. So each stone has a certain meaning, and then for me it was kind of a message like from the ancestors, so kind of like really connecting with like where we've come from, and then that history that's come through and that wisdom, and then it becomes like this beautiful symbol, so people can kind of use them as a form of like questioning, like you would like any sort of divination, like the tarot or something like that. Then you just kind of pick a stone and it kind of would give you an answer to your question for that day. And then I started using those as part of the rituals, so then people would then have something to take away that could remind them of that kind of that space, of that kind of magical place, because we're so caught up with life and busyness and, you know, worries and all the rest of it. So to actually sort of take some time out and give yourself space to heal and space to feel those difficult feelings that obviously we don't always want to feel, but need to kind of like flow through us to be transmuted. So that was kind of part of it. So they became like a healing talisman, really.
I was just thinking, when you're working with, because we'll come on to the kind of raku in a moment, but when you're working with the clay and you're making, say, one of your beautiful vases, which I'm hugely coveting, and they're so stunning. And when you're making like one of those, for example, and when you're making one of the Adinkra stones, which are obviously much smaller, does it feel different in the way, in terms of like, maybe not maybe the intention, but the kind of feeling that you get from it? Do they feel different, or is it kind of the same thing?
Yeah, I would definitely say they feel different. I think when I'm making the pots, because I'm making a lot at a time, because I hand build everything, I don't throw, I'm a committed hand builder, I pinch and coil, so it does take time. So it is a very meditative process. So I'm making several pieces at a time, and the Adinkra symbols are very different because they're very small. So these, the stones I make, so they're very small. So often I will do those at home because it's something I can do at home. And because I'm always like, oh, I need to be doing something with my hands. And sometimes I'd work with pots at home, but it's just not the same because it's like too messy. So I can kind of bring bits of clay and I can just like really kind of like get into the symbols. And I just love that process of like carving them. And it's, so it's very meditative, but in a kind of different way to doing the pots, because it's kind of, it's very small and contained, and I can just kind of really focus on the symbols.
And kind of on the kind of meditative aspects of it, I watched your video of you on your website of you creating the pot, and the way that you build it, and you, I don't know what the technique's called,
like
you
mentioned, coiling,
yeah. And it just looks so, I don't want to say painstaking, but it's so, you know, you really have to stick with it. Is there a point when you're making it where you have, because, you know, I used to teach meditation, and I've kind of been in that kind of world for a long time, having practice and stuff. And I find, just in terms of like sitting down and meditating, I have that bit where it's almost like the barrier where I get really frustrated about how still I'm being and how I'm not doing it. You know, it's almost like this, like, oh, I just want to stop. But it's on the other side of that, that things start to, you know, you just find that slowness and that. Do you feel that as well? How does that kind of meditative aspect of it come in? And is there a point at which it becomes meditative?
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually, because Yeah, the coiling, because the one of the reasons I like the coiling process is it is a slow process and you do have to kind of really slow down and really feel the clay. And when I'm teaching, I'm trying to get people to use their other senses. So it's not just about how it looks, but you have to really feel like the thickness of the piece and the coil, how you're attaching the coil. And I think there is, it's hard to kind of stay in that space because when you're working, you can kind of only work so much and then you need to let it dry off. So if you've got kind of several pieces, it become like a bit of a rhythm. So you're kind of like working on different pieces. But I think there's something about using your hands, and especially obviously because I've been doing it for a long time. So I know the process and I can create the shape I want to make. And I can like really drop down into a sort of deeper space. I think there's just something healing about using your hands, sort of getting into the present moment, letting all those kind of worries go away and just kind of focusing on the clay. And because you're hand building, it's kind of, it is slow, but you also have to really focus. So I think that really helps. And just that connection with the earth, because you're using clay that comes from the earth. And then there's all those different elements that come into it. And so there's something like really magical about what you create. As someone said to me recently, I did a grief ritual retreat recently, and we did a pit firing. So that's kind of a very ancient way of firing pots. So they haven't been bisque fired, which is the first firing at all. It's just, we made them. And then after they dried, we put them in a pit and set a fire to it. And then the next day the clay had turned in ceramic. And it was just that realization that someone said to me, I'd never really thought about how it gets from being clay to ceramic. And it was just such a magical process. And I think that for me is all part of it. There's the different cycles. So there's the making, and that's very meditative. And then once I'm glazing, then obviously I need to get into a bit of a flow state to kind of create the design or whatever I'm doing. And then the raku firing, there's something about, because raku originated in Japan many, many years ago, and it's kind of been adapted to the West. So basically raku is where you take pots out of the kiln when they're red hot after they've been glazed, and then they crackle in the cool air and you plunge them into sawdust. And there's something about when you're in the right frame of mind, when you're kind of really connected, then that process really flows. But if you're not, there's something, things start to go wrong. And so there's again, that's got a meditative element to it, because you have to be really focused and in the right zone, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And I was thinking, it's almost like, I was thinking about, like, you were talking about the earth, and then you've got the fire, and that kind of, there's almost, it feels like there's like a metaphor there. Do you know what I mean? Of like, you create something and then you're almost but not quite destroying it, and then it becomes something completely different.
Yeah
You know, you're placing it in the fire in order for it to transform,
basically. yeah absolutely. And it's quite scary, because that's when things can go wrong.
Yeah.
Things can crack, or you might bring it out of the kiln or drop it. And so there is that element of risk as well. And I think with any form of change, there is that element of risk, isn't it? So like you say, it is a bit like a metaphor. And also what I use, some of those processes as part of my kind of rituals as well. So during the retreat, we created what I call them adinkra spirit rattles. So we kind of were using pieces of clay that we joined together, but inside, so they were hollow inside, and we rolled up little balls of clay and wrote down things we wanted to release on the bits of paper and wrapped those around the clay, and they went inside the piece. So when it was fired, that paper burnt away. So there's that transformation, there's that release and letting go, and then you've got this beautiful rattle, which then can be used as part of your ritual or just kind of placed on your altar. And just So it kind of reminds you of like, okay, what have I let go of? What do I want to let go of? And I think we've always naturally used fire in that way, haven't we? Kind of burn things that we don't want or want to release. Mm. I think there's something very powerful about that.
Yeah, that is beautiful. I love the idea of that rattle.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's gorgeous. And so we've kind of touched on it a little bit already, but yeah, I suppose in terms of your creative practice, where do you gain your inspiration from? Like from concept to final piece, where does that sort of start and where are you finding is the most inspiring place or thing or how does that all start?
I think I've got two different elements that bring me inspiration, and one of them is like when I'm walking in nature, and where I live there's just kind of so many amazing places, you know. I kind of like from where my house is, I can kind of like walk down a beautiful valley and end up at the sea, and it's kind of, you know, you've got the cliffs, and so you've got all these different elements. You've got like the river going down to the sea, you've got the trees, and then you kind of come to the rugged cliffs, so you can either go down to the sea or you can walk along the cliffs. So for me, that is kind of a real part of my practice, just kind of walking and just being in that space. Again, it's a bit like walking meditation. You just kind of get flashes of insight and inspiration. So there is that. Then there's something about my wild Cornwall pots are really inspired by the Cornish hedgerows. And if you've been to Cornwall in the spring, they're just amazing. So around about May, they're usually at their best. And they're just so beautiful. And, you know, all the different flowers and that you've always got the gorse. So that was the inspiration for those. And then the Sea and Cliffs collection came from when I very, very first ever visited Cornwall. The first place I went, the first beach I went to was Porthcurno, which is not far from where I now live. And I just could not believe the colour of the sea. It was like bright turquoise. You think you can't believe you're in England.
Yeah, it's amazing. I said that to the kids the other day last week. And Cora was like, look at the colour of that sea. You don't get that in Brighton.
So that has become, I mean, because especially with Raku, I've got a beautiful like turquoise glaze. So it's kind of like my signature glaze that I always use. But that's kind of where those pieces originated from. And then the shapes of the lines and the patterns of the cliffs. And that's like another thing that really inspires me. And then just like really things like you see an amazing pebble and you just look at it closely and you just see the lines and the shapes in it. So again, that's slightly different. Was kind of something that's very small and then you kind of get inspired by this rock. So that's like another way. And then sometimes I just get inspired through my dreams. So that's kind of like another aspect of my inspiration, and that's kind of the more recent work, like with the Adinkra stones and the installations and the sculptures that I've been making. So often I'll just kind of wake up and I've had this kind of really inspiring dream and I just kind of want to create that feeling within my work. Yeah,
I love that capacity for art to communicate that, you know, like a way of I don't know if the word portal is the right word, but you know, you're gaining access into somebody's interpretation of the landscape or their dreams, or I love that part of art and creativity.
Yeah, it's incredible. And what's really special for me is obviously when someone like buys a piece of my work and it's so precious and amazing and inspiring for them. And often people say to me, you know, especially with the wild Cornwall pots, they'll just say they just keep seeing more within it. And that just gives me so much pleasure and joy, that because my mission is to like bring joy and beauty and colour into people's lives. So when that actually works, when someone buys it and it does that, it's like, yes, that's it, my job is done.
Yeah, and it's so much more special having something from someone that you can see that you know you've seen the artist, you see how they work, and it makes that piece like come alive in a way it doesn't if it's like mass produced or just bought in a, you know, like a supermarket or whatever.
No, it's true. It's kind of like that we were saying about the Odinkra stones, that I believe that the pieces I make have got an energy of their own. So then when it goes into someone's home, it's kind of, you know, it's exuding that beautiful, like Cornish energy, because it's just so beautiful here. And a lot of people come to Cornwall year after year and get really inspired by nature and the landscape. So for them to then take a piece of what I make and it kind of to remind them of that beautiful holiday or whatever that they had, then that just means the world to me.
And so kind of thinking about the kind of nature element of what you do and your art as an expression of your connection to nature, have you got any I wonder how your kind of connection to nature has developed over the years, if it has at all, if you've got any earliest memories, or just I would love to hear about your own personal connection to the natural world.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when I was a kid, I grew up in a city. So I grew up in Liverpool, and I think I always had that yearning. I always thought about running away and kind of being in the countryside. And I always wanted a horse, which I never got. But, you know, and I think as I grew older and I moved to Brighton, I think that for me was incredible because I was actually right by the sea, and that really meant a lot for me. And I was having quite a difficult time at that point in my life. And I was always feel so much better when I'd feel really rubbish and really down. And then I'd go and just sit by the sea and I would just feel totally different after that, and I didn't really do anything. I just sat and looked at the sea, at the ocean. And so that really made me realize how important that connection was, like for my own kind of like mental well-being. And so then one of the things that I was really inspired by at that time in my life, I discovered the Orisha, who are nature spirits that originated in Nigeria. So I really connected with that, and so that kind of for me it's like, okay, that makes sense. And it's that belief that everything in nature has got its own kind of like spirit, so that really resonated with me. So I really connected with that. And for me, it was about the ocean and the rivers and a real connection with the sea. And all of a sudden it's like, yes, this is it. This is what I'm really inspired by. And that real connection with nature. And then obviously I was at Stanmer Park at that time. So it was that kind of like nature connection, working with clay and being outside, because you have to do your raku firings and the pit firings. They're kind of about being outside. And then, I don't know, there was something about, I was there for a long time and I loved it, and the South Downs and the sea, and it's really beautiful. But there was something about, I just wanted something a bit wilder. And I think that's what drew me to come down to Cornwall. It's just that I wanted to be somewhere wild.
yeah, I can completely understand that, like, because we go to Cornwall every year, like I said, you know. We take the kids down in the autumn because it's quieter.
Yes.
And I completely understand, like, I grew up in London. I feel very lucky to live down here now. We've got the sea, we've got the South Downs, but there's something very managed about it all.
Yeah.
And now that I'm kind of working in, you know, I have a conservation group and stuff like this, and we work in a slightly wilder space, but when I go to Cornwall, there is something, because I always run along the Southwest Coast Path, and it's so different from running in the South Downs, because I always prefer to trail run, because you've got the sea, which is just relentless in Cornwall.
Yeah.
In a way that it maybe doesn't feel so in, I mean, it can be obviously down here, but there is, and those, the cliffs and the random rocks in the sea, you know,
yes.
it feels so old.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I totally get that. And that is what's something I love about it. And also in this area, I live like West Penwith, so it's kind of right at the very end, mm-hmm. you know, not far from Land's End. And mm-hmm. so it's like really the Wild West. Mm-hmm. and there's a lot, what I also love about it is there's a lot of kind of like really ancient sites. So you kind of have standing stones and stone circles and wells. And so there's that kind of real kind of mystical sacred element to the land as well, which is fascinating. And I mean, I have heard, I mean, I don't know if it's true or not, but one of my facts is that this area of West Penwith is the highest proportion of ancient sites in the whole of Europe. So just wow. in this small area of West Penwith, there's like so many places.
I love that. Where do you run your retreats? Do you run them down there?
Yeah, well, I did my first one back in September, and there's an amazing house near Lamorna called Rosemeron Wood. And it's this beautiful woodland and there's a big house, and we did it there. Oh, and wow. I'm hoping to do another one. That was a weekend retreat. And the people who came on it really got a lot out of it. So we were using creativity, but we were also kind of like, there was that opportunity to share our experiences of grief and loss mm-hmm. and what we lost and were grieving, and we did a grief ritual. But I mean, it sounds hard, but actually there was a lot of joy within that, because often when you are grieving, you have lost someone, then it can be hard to talk about in your everyday life. So this was a space where we could all come together and just create that community where we could talk about that just around the dining table, and then we could use that creative practice to help kind of like release some of that. So yeah, it's an amazing location, so I'm hoping to do another one, but probably not till 2024. I'm looking to create a week-long retreat, because there just wasn't enough time for us to do all the creative stuff that we wanted to do. So I'm planning something like that in the future, definitely.
Sounds amazing. How did the idea to set up a retreat come out of, you know, you're making your pots and your anchor stones? How did that kind of come to be?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm really not sure. So during that time, so we had, obviously, we all know that we've gone through a really difficult few years mm-hmm. With lockdown and COVID. And then I got the grant that I said from the Arts Council. So that gave me that time to create new work. But alongside that, I also got a grant from Cultivator in Cornwall to mm-hmm. work with a mentor.
Oh, wow.
So I worked with Dr. Wendy Gears, who's a ceramics specialist in ceramics and a ceramics coach, and she's a curator. And so I worked with her for a year, and it was part of that process of having someone I could talk to about my work and how I was developing my work. And through those conversations, that kind of came out. And it was so interesting that I kind of decided to do the retreat, because I then found something I wrote like back in like 2009 when I first moved down. I did, it was like a course on, it was kind of about writing your business plan, but it was about creating the business plan, but it was more from a creative perspective. So it was like focused on creatives. And the mission, I had to write a mission statement. This was like over 10 years ago. And it was like, you know, I mean, I can't remember it word for word, but I found it recently. And it was like, I want to do like creative arts retreats, drawing on my African and British heritage and using ceremony and ritual. And then I'd like, okay, well, I've obviously remembered it somewhere in the back of my brain, because now I'm actually doing that.
Wow.
And I think also for me, it was, I'd been doing the grief rituals just because as one-off, one-day events. And I felt like I just wanted to create something that was more immersive. So we could be there for a few days, we could use that creative element and just take some time out from life to do some kind of healing and creativity and community and be in nature because we're in this beautiful location. So it was all those different elements came together, and then it was kind of held together by my art practice. So I created an ancestral altar, and people could then bring things to add to that during that weekend. And it was just such a magical experience. I mean, people really got a lot out of it, and I also got a lot out of it, because it was just so wonderful to be able to hold that space for people, but also to share that joy of nature and creativity as a healing practice.
That's so, yeah. I was just thinking how, with difficult and big, in inverted commas, emotions, it can be really hard to talk about that stuff. Mm. And the idea that you've created a space where people are creating at the same time as being in a space that's very held. Mm. It's almost like, you know, when ages ago I had a therapist on, and she does walking therapy in the woods. She takes her clients out to the woods and that kind of thing. And she said, you know, when people aren't looking at you, when you're not trying to hold eye contact with someone, it's much easier for people to sort of speak about all the deep emotions and stuff. And I was thinking, I wonder if it's almost like the same thing with creating something, especially with your hands, because you're distracted, but or your mind is occupied in that way. So maybe it's easier to, you can either put that into what you're creating, or it's easier for the words to come out when you're kind of not really looking at people, you know, like, yeah. I wonder if that's.
Yeah. I think that totally makes sense. And I think that reminds me, because I'm also, I mentor a young person, and we basically sit in my studio and make things out of clay, and we talk. Mm-hmm. And it's just, and again, it's just one of those things of just kind of being with the clay can kind of help to transform your feelings. You might come mm-hmm. in feeling really crap, and then mm-hmm. you kind of leave thinking, oh, I've just created something and had a really nice conversation. So like, and I think that again, it just, like you say, you're not having to look directly at someone, you can just kind of relax and kind of, you're working with your hands, but then you mm-hmm. can kind of like talk about anything that might, any issues or just anything that inspires you. And yeah, so I think there's definitely something to that, and I'm exploring that more and more as I kind of work with different people in more of a healing capacity.
Mm-hmm. It seems to sort of, one seems to have flowed quite easily from one, you know, one thing seems to have flowed quite easily to the other.
Yeah It's true. And I recently did a presentation, I think it's still up on my YouTube channel. I have got a YouTube channel, but there's not a lot on there, but there's a few videos. And one of the things that I was looking at was that threads that flow through my work that almost I'd forgotten were there. And it is that element of the healing, and for me particularly ancestral healing. So mm-hmm. and that has just kind of been there all along, and I look and I think, oh yeah, I was doing that back then, like 10 mm-hmm. 20 years ago, and it's kind of coming back in to my practice. And I love that, when you kind of look at where you've come from and how it's always been there. You might not realize it, but it's kind of that thread just kind of flows through. Mm. And I've always been interested in the therapeutic benefits of art. I've never actually trained as an art therapist, but I've always worked therapeutically. So for my own personal self, I know how important it's been for me. And I've had difficult times in my life where, you know, I've suffered from depression, and I've had losses, people close to me have died, and so I've had relationship breakups, whatever, can be really, really difficult. But always for me, it's my art practice that has kind of really helped me get through that. And so if I can kind of help other people find that for themselves, then that really means a lot to me. And because I know how important it is and how transformative art can be, and especially for me, especially with clay, because often people don't get access to clay. It's one of the, I often have people come on my courses and they're like, oh, I haven't done ceramics since I was at school. I haven't touched clay since I was at school. And it was like, okay, well, this is the time now to really embrace it and get into it.
I was just thinking as you were speaking, the world that we're living in now and everything that we're kind of all experiencing together, I wonder what's your view of kind of where art and creativity fit into that, and where their role in the world we're now living in, if that makes sense.
I think art and creativity have always been really undervalued, in the sense of, you know, it's often not as valued as a more academic subject, but that creativity feeds into all areas of our lives, and I think that is like really valuable. So if you're kind of a creative person, then you're also really good at problem solving and thinking of other solutions or creative solutions to problems. And I think particularly now, where we're at this point in time, it's that artists are also visionaries, so they can kind of see what is possible and what sort of lives we can have. And also looking back to the way we've lived in the past, and just a more nature-based life, kind of living closer to the land, being able to build our own homes and creating that community. I think that is all kind of like a creative process, and something that would be really good if we could kind of get back to that, get back to, you know, being more self-reliant, self-sufficient, working in smaller communities. And I think kind of art and creativity can really play a part in that, because, you know, art is a way of kind of bringing people together. And I see that as part of what I do. It's like I'll create, say, an exhibition or an installation, then I'll bring my community together. And, you know, it's just such a really healing space. We can either create within that space, or we can have ceremony, but we've got that connection with nature and community. I think that's really important. And I think we need to come back to that.
I love what you just said. It just, you know, when you hear, and just like all the bells are ringing, like resonating in all different ways. Yeah, I just.
Excellent.
It's so powerful. And it's so lovely, because sometimes, you know, like when you're in your own head and you just think, oh, because we've been so taught that art is not as valuable, that you'll never get a job as an artist or a creative or whatever. It is so lovely to hear you saying this, but also speaking so passionately about the role that it plays in where we go from here. Yeah. I'm such a big believer in that. And I'm such a big believer in, like, for me personally, in my own practice, is like, it's now not really about anything other than creating new worlds, creating, because I write. So it's all about looking, being hopeful about, you know, rather than being sucked down. And I think art has such a huge role to play in that hope.
Yes.
You know?
I love what you said. Yes, that, I love that. Yes, definitely. It is about kind of focusing on the hope and the future, and not getting dragged down into the fear, because, you know, like, everything changes. I mean, that's the only thing we can rely on, is that things change. So if we can get really focused on, okay, well, what is the change going to look like? Then we can have some say in how that's going to change. And that's why I think that it's really important for groups and communities, and it to come together. And it is really about, like, grassroots change, isn't it? It's about, yes. Okay, we, the people, what can we do to make a change? We feel like really out of control with what's happening on the kind of wider political stage. But so what can we do as a people, as our individual selves and as our on our group and within our local community? And I think that's something that happened during lockdown, because we all had to get really like, okay, we're just stuck at home, we're stuck in our local community. But all those communities who came together, you know, my neighbour put a card through everyone's door saying, if you need anything, here's my phone number. If you can't get out, I can do your shopping. And there's, so there's that real sense of that community. I think that was something that was really crucial that came out of these last few years, is just thinking, okay, I'm going to look after my neighbour and look out for them and see how they are and see how I can help locally.
So I'm conscious of time and I really don't want this conversation to finish, but I'm very aware that you need to get on with your day. So I have a couple of questions that I always ask everyone. The first one is, when you think about your journey up until this point, is there, or what is one lesson that you would pass on to people, listeners?
Yeah. You know, well, as soon as I first hear that question, I'm thinking, what is the one thing? And I think it's like patience and perseverance. It's like whatever you want to achieve in life, it's like you just have to really believe that it can happen and you just have to keep going. And especially as an artist and a creative person, there's no direct path to where you want to go. There's no kind of like route. You're going to be, you know, you go from here to there, this job, you get this next job and you kind of like move up the ladder. There's nothing like that. It's like you have to create your own path. So I think if you are a creative person and you want to make a difference in the world, then it's just about holding your vision and being patient and just persevering, just keep going and just holding that vision.
I love that. And almost I feel like as well, like there's no end result, there's no like end goal. With I think we're so taught that like you have to have an ambition and a very clear goal that you're heading towards. And then when you kind of, I'm finding as I get older, I'm like, that goal is not really what, it doesn't really exist. That's what I'm realizing. It's not there.
It's about enjoying the journey, isn't it? Yeah. You know, we're all here to like live our lives the best we can. And so if we're always kind of like focused in the future or in the past, then we're kind of like, we're really missing what's happening right in front of us. And I think that's something that both creativity and nature can give us, is just kind of being in that present moment and just enjoying where we're at.
Yeah, I love that. And then, and I'm going to be thinking patience and perseverance like all day now. That's the rest of the day. So the next question is about a vision for the future. So when you, what is the future that you would like to see, basically?
Yeah, I see it so clearly. I'm actually a member of a co-housing group here in Cornwall. Wow. So as a community, our vision is to build our own homes, which are based on kind of like eco and sustainable principles, and to create a way of life that is kind of closer to nature, so we can kind of grow more of our own food and also help to educate other people, but also have those healing elements, because quite a few of us are healers, shamans, therapists, and obviously me as an artist. So it's kind of creating community, being able to build our own homes in a sustainable way and showing that it is possible. And especially at this point in time where, you know, we've got a housing crisis going on in this country. And I mean, obviously, because I'm in Cornwall, I kind of see it, you know, there's not enough new homes for people. There's, you know, there's a lot of second homeowners, and there's a lot of holiday homes.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, it's really sad to see, especially with younger people, just not able to get a home of their own. And it, and for me, it's like, that is just a basic human need.
Absolutely.
Everyone should have a shelter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, for us, it is just showing a way forward. Okay, so we can do this. We can build our own homes. It doesn't have to cost loads of money. And then we can live more sustainably. We can, you know, take care of the planet as well as ourselves, but also like creating community. So you've got kind of different generations living together, you know, and we can support each other. I think for me, that is kind of a really important vision.
Mm. I love that. It sounds, yeah, it's beautiful. We have a few, we've got, I don't know if you know about the, what are they called? The sheds. Do you know about the sheds in Brighton?
No.
Kind of in like, not far from the Devil's Dyke, if you go down that road, before you get to Devil's Dyke on the left, there's a little cluster of houses, and that's exactly what that is.
Yes, there's a few, isn't there? I think there's a few self-build projects in Brighton, isn't there? Yeah,
just that idea. I have such a problem. We have a real problem with second homes down here, as you you probably know in Brighton. Yeah. And like 1 in 30 houses are empty, and also, and it's like, well, we wouldn't have a housing crisis if that wasn't allowed, you know, like that's completely out of control. But I love this idea that, yeah, that you're starting something with a view to like, yes, this is what can be done.
Yeah
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, it gives me a lot of hope for the future.
Yeah.
and so just to kind of round off and close off, where can people find you? Where can they find your work and, all the amazing things you're doing?
Yeah, well, I'm on a lot of the platforms. I've got my own website, looktaylorceramics.co.uk. I'm also on Instagram, looktaylorceramics, and Facebook, also looktaylorceramics. If you search my name, I'm going to come up.
Yeah. And people can like buy your pieces and.
Yeah, you can buy it either directly from my website, and also on my website, there's links to galleries that I show at. If you're ever in Cornwall and you get in touch, you can visit me in my studio.
Mm. I might be looking you up next year.
Yeah, do. Come down. Yeah, because I always often have stuff in my studio that doesn't make it to the website. But and I also run Raku courses, and obviously I've got the grief rituals and retreats, so all of that is on my website and you can check that out, and I have an email list so you can sign up and keep in touch.
Lovely, thank you. Thank you so much for your time. This is, I've just loved hearing about your work and your passion, and it's just, just, I feel like I'm just going to have a smile on my face for the rest of the day.
You know what, Helen, I feel the same. It's been such a pleasure to meet you and talk to you, and thank you so much for inviting me. It's been absolutely brilliant. I'm feeling really inspired now.